So now, as I've told you, Carol is going to tell you what she's doing, okay? So that's the best thing. But I have to say something about Carol. I mean, I know her as somebody very helpful and a colleague and a friend and so forth, but here's stuff I didn't know. Okay, Carol has been a member of the Regina Unitarian Fellowship for about 7 years and has served on several committees, including the Welcoming Congregation Committee. As most of you know, the UFR received its Welcoming Congregation designation 3 years ago, announcing to the world that we respect and welcome members of the LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. Carol has many friends and extended family members from that community and is strongly committed to the protection of their rights and welfare. Carol.
I think that your disappointment at not hearing the speaker who was scheduled to come today will be very much tempered by the actual presentation that you're going to hear, which is not written by me. It was supplied to me, I think, by a combination of Helen and Andrew, and it is a presentation that was given by a Unitarian in Ontario, and we'll get to that in just a moment. I obviously can't speak to the issues that Lonnie was going to address, but I can give you a kind of mini status report on LGBT community issues just by reading a few headlines or listening to the news for the past 2 weeks. And I know that this would be true for every two-week period of every year. We all know that great strides have been made in the past few decades towards recognizing the rights of those in the LGBT community, from adding sexual orientation to the prohibited grounds of discrimination in the Canadian Human Rights Act to the legalization of gay marriage in many countries, including Canada, and many states in the U.S. But lest we begin to believe that this struggle is over, that this battle has been won, one needs only to listen to or read the news headlines over the past few weeks. Do these stories or any of them sound familiar to you? The murder of 29-year-old Mark Carson in Greenwich Village, a murder deemed to be a hate crime. Mark Carson was a gay man. In the 2 weeks or so preceding his murder, there were three other incidents of harassment and beatings of gay men in an area of New York City, of Manhattan, considered to be LGBT friendly, probably the most friendly in all of America. The murder in Clarksdale, Mississippi, of Marco McMillan, an openly gay mayoralty candidate. The anti-gay attack led by Orthodox priests in the Republic of Georgia. The case of Carla Hale, whom you may or may not have heard about. Who heard about Carla Hale in the news? Carla was a 57-year-old phys ed teacher and coach in Columbus, Ohio, who found herself summarily fired by the Catholic School Board when her mother's obituary was published, identifying Carla's lesbian partner as a mourner. I'm sure you all know about the case in Saskatoon, in which a bridal shop refused service to a transgendered woman, and that case is now the subject of a human rights complaint. It's great that the Boy Scouts of America now will openly admit gay boys for the first time. But adult men who are still denied acceptance as scout leaders, and lesbian women cannot be den mothers. These headlines for the past 2 weeks alone include these and many other crimes and acts of discrimination. Arguably, the most misunderstood and vulnerable members of the LGBT community are transgender persons. And today's presentation is going to focus on that particular group. It is a presentation that was given, written, and delivered by Unitarian Joan Wiley, the mother of a transgendered son. She describes herself as a professional writer, editor, and recovering journalist. And among her many accomplishments, Joan is the founder of Transparent Canada. Isn't that clever? I just love that title. Transparent Canada, a peer support network for the parents and friends of trans children. Her presentation is entitled Celebrating the T in LGBTQ, One Family's Sacred Journey. And from this point on, I will be speaking in the first person, but these are the words of Joan Wiley. This journey started with words that you may have spoken or heard yourselves. Mom, I have something to tell you. My husband and I have two amazing children. Our daughter is 20 years old and in her third year of university in this city. Our oldest child recently celebrated his 23rd birthday. For the first 18 years, we loved this kid as a daughter. And for the last 5 years, we have cherished this same child as our son. He is transgender. Trying to understand sexual orientation is one thing, but many people, if not most, have a much more difficult time wrapping their heads around the definition of gender. One of the simplest definitions of sex and gender I've ever read is, gender is what is between your ears, sex is what is between your legs. Sex is the biological, physical body, its reproductive organs, its secondary sex characteristics. Prevailing societal beliefs say humans are divided into a binary sexual, male or female, as defined by doctors at birth. Chromosomally, sex is determined as XX for women, XY for men. Just as society unquestionably believes that there are two bodies, male and female, it also believes there are two genders, man and woman. If you inhabit a male body, you are a man. If you inhabit a female body, you are a woman. And somehow gender identity, a person's intrinsic sense of self or soul, of manhood or womanhood, is supposed to somehow magically take up residence in the appropriate body each and every time. Gender defines how we dress, pink versus blue, how we behave, submissive versus aggressive, what jobs are appropriate and how much we will be paid to do them, or how to express ourselves emotionally or stoically. And because it is a social construct, gender demands shift with the times. Transgender is the T in that alphabet soup combination of letters: lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, two-spirited, queer, and questioning. And it is often used as the umbrella term for those people who are gender variant. But we mustn't assume that all trans persons want to be identified as being in the vanguard of smashing gender definitions or wish to identify as men or women. Many trans persons identify as both, as neither, or as someone altogether different. Gender identity has absolutely nothing to do with sexual and erotic attraction. A trans person can be gay, lesbian, straight, bisexual, asexual. In other words, anywhere on the spectrum of human affection and desire. Trans people are often assumed to be suffering from mental illness, personality disorders, or psychosis. The medical term for a trans person is one who experiences a gender identity disorder or gender dysphoria. Transitioning is the period whereby trans persons begin changing their appearance and bodies to match their internal identity. Because these changes are so visible, they must literally out themselves to everyone, co-workers, families, and friends. While in transition, they are highly vulnerable to discrimination and marginalization. Our trans children share some of the same challenges as gays and lesbians, and also experience issues that are completely different. And these are risky and expensive sex reassignment surgery, hormone treatments that are often accompanied by nasty side effects, prying intimate questions that would be considered shockingly rude if asked of anyone else, endless red tape procedures to obtain legal name changes, very real personal safety issues, inadequate funding and availability of social services, and of course, rampant rejection by family and friends. Herschel Russell, a trans activist in Toronto, cites a U.S. study in which 24 young trans people were interviewed. 23 of the 24 faced verbal and physical harassment. 18 dropped out of school, and 17 were sexually assaulted or raped. And because most trans youth cannot bear up under the tremendous bullying they experience, as a rule, they are underschooled and therefore underemployed. As well, Russell notes, many homeless shelters are gender-based or inappropriate for the trans people. Given all of that, it is not surprising that the greatest heartbreaking statistic is this. One-third to one-half of all trans persons have attempted suicide, and many have completed taking their own lives. Transgender people have a long way to go before they enjoy full equality, although there have been some baby steps taken in that direction. On October 31, 2002, the Northwest Territories became the first jurisdiction in Canada to explicitly prohibit discrimination against transgender people. The Northwest Territories. I should note, this presentation was given in 2007, so it predates some of the changes that have taken place since then. Consider now some of the privileges we have as non-trans people. Strangers don't assume they can ask us what our genitals look like or how we have sex. Strangers do not ask what our real name or birth name is and then disregard our chosen name. We don't worry whether we'll be able to find a bathroom to use or whether we will be safe while changing in locker room. We're not considered mentally ill because of the way we identify. Our medical problems are not always related back to our gender. Oh, you have an eye infection. It must be because of those hormones you're taking. Emergency trips to the hospital are not fraught with anxiety or even put off because of our gender. On a related medical note, a young trans man whom I've come to love and deeply respect as a friend describes how difficult it is to present as a male and request an annual gynecological exam to make sure all of his female parts are in good working order. We aren't questioned or have our medals stripped when we win a sporting event. A trans competitive downhill cyclist from Canada says, "I have found as a trans person it's acceptable to compete. But don't you dare win." The media don't consistently portray us as something less than human or trot out stereotypes. We do not have family values lobbyists mounting campaigns to keep us from doing the jobs we love. Finally, we do not have to run the risk of being physically or emotionally abused every time our gender identity becomes known. Despite these hardships, many of our children succeed to live their truth. And this is why, when I'm standing with a trans person, I know I'm in the presence of astounding courage. The experience with our son pushed the launch button that started me on a personal journey as a more active friend of the Pride community. In December 2004, I knew my life as a better friend had begun in earnest when I volunteered to sit on the organizing committee of Pride Network of Niagara and came out as a straight woman in a bar, a straight woman in a gay bar. This led eventually to the formation of Transparent Canada, a support network for the parents and children, and friends of trans children of all generations. Instead of searching for the meaning of life, my path is now taking me on a life with meaning. And this has led me straight, no pun intended, to the Pride community as a friend and ally. As a result, my life has been enriched immeasurably, and I've gained much more than I have given. Our son's exit from his closet changed nothing, and it changed everything. Our love for this child was undiminished, but our memories were ambushed. In those initial confusing months, I peered long and hard at the gazillion photos and family portraits, looking for early clues to our son's new, to us, identity, and scoured our local library for copies of Transparenting for Dummies. The images swimming around in our heads of a blonde, blue-eyed girl and memories of our obstetrician's first words, "Congratulations, you have a girl," were very confusing given our new reality. In those early days, our son was the only trans person we knew, nor did we know any other parents walking this walk. It was extremely isolating and lonely. We dreaded telling others and their potential reactions. And as loving and supportive as they are, even members of the local chapter of PFLAG Canada, remember we had a PFLAG panel, I think, speak here, parents, friends, and families of lesbians and gays, were the first to admit they couldn't fully identify with our situation or answer our very specific questions. Supportive parents, I've discovered, are rarely visible. It has become apparent to me that when trans folks emerge from the closet, their parents often enter it. There may be many reasons why they go into this dark place. Denial, shame, or bewilderment that the child they thought they knew is a stranger. An overwhelming sense of loss, grief, or guilt. Cultural or religious considerations and biases. And perhaps most of all, unfamiliarity with trans issues. After all, the only exposure many parents have had with trans people is from far less than supportive daytime talk shows. I also believe many parents want to support their trans children, but are so overwhelmed by the issue that they are paralyzed. This was certainly true in the early stages in our case. Little things like pronouns became huge hurdles. He, him, she, her. And I was forever beating myself up for getting them wrong. But our son was very patient. After all, he said, he'd had a long time to get used to them because he had trans-identified for a very long time. During my journey, guilt and shame were added to the emotional mix when I concluded that I was the only one who seemed to need support. Where were the support groups? Where were the other parents? I concluded I was weak and that those other parents were better and stronger than I could ever be. So as a family, we gained our strength from neighbors and friends who were overwhelmingly supportive when we told them of our new family dynamics. I'll never forget the mid-December day I left the house clutching a stack of letters destined to be dropped off at nearby homes to invite our neighbors to join in celebrating our son. The words I whispered to myself as I walked up to each home, "Spirit of life, come unto me. Spirit of life, come unto me." gave me great comfort and steeled me for the task ahead. It became my Unitarian mantra, borrowed from one of my favorite Unitarian hymns. We also gained strength from our Unitarian community congregation in Niagara. We have a smaller membership, and so we're able to address the congregation with joys and concerns. When we told our church friends our news, we received a standing ovation. Our congregation, while not officially a welcoming congregation, is considered by Niagara's LGBTQ community to be strongly supportive. I informed friends and neighbors who called to support us that I was experiencing the same feelings I'd had when I was pregnant with my son. Anticipation, wonder, excitement, lots of anxiety, curiosity. I even had stretch marks, but this time they were all in my headspace as I broadened and deepened my understanding of what it meant to be fully human. As to be expected, not everyone was supportive. We had a bitter taste of rejection when one entire side of our family, inflamed by religious zeal, split away. Our son was labeled an abomination, and my husband and I were called unfit parents. We were disinvited to the family Christmas gathering. That was in 2004, and the estrangement continues to this day. Our children learned the hard way that proclamations of unconditional love are not always what they seem. It would seem, even among family members, that there is so much fixation with what is going on below the belt that they fail to remember the human heart that beats in the chest. I often say that our son is still the same gift to the world he has always been, just wrapped up in a different ribbon. And just to annoy the social, political, and religious conservatives who would force our son back into a closet, I informed them that our child, in a very real sense, has been born again. It was during this very difficult time of experiencing firsthand the loathing of uninformed and misinformed people that my angry inner mama bear roared to the surface. And the idea of forming a support group for the parents of trans children first wriggled its way into my brain. Could the reason I hadn't met other parents of trans children be because they too felt the same shame and embarrassment that our relatives did? Were they as uninformed about trans issues as I was? Were they captive in their own closets because they had no one to turn to? But I'm ashamed to say that the idea of a support group waned. After all, despite the rejection of a large number of relatives, our immediate family had triumphed. Our daughter had instantly opened her heart to her brother. Our son continued to thrive. Our marriage had survived. Let others deal with their own problems. And that's when I met the thief of my heart at the 2005 Toronto Pride Parade. I was marching with members of PFLAG. This was the first time I had participated in or even attended this riotous, binary-busting celebration of sexual and gender diversity. Anybody been there? It's quite a parade. We members of PFLAG, were easy to spot with our sensible footwear, sun hats, and protective clothing. Quite a contrast to many of the parade onlookers and participants, especially the spirited delegates from TNT, Totally Naked Toronto, dangling their participles a few units behind. This thief, a young man, grinned when he saw my hand-lettered sign. It said, "I love my trans son." And he started jabbing his finger into his chest, indicating that he too was someone's trans son. I broke ranks with PFLAG and waded into the crowd, sign and all, to give this stranger a hug. We embraced for a very long time, and then he whispered, I wish my mom had been as understanding as you. The aching sadness and despair in his voice was undeniable, and my heart broke. By the end of the parade, I'd made up my mind. It was time to form Transparent, to coax parents out of their closets so that they may celebrate their children's journey to authenticity. Not a day goes by when I don't think of that young man. I absolutely do not want to leave the impression that this journey has been all about hardships. Quite the opposite is true. This has been a sacred odyssey, and there have been many moments of pure joy, poetry, beauty, and yes, even humor. We've watched our son grow in confidence and make exciting plans for his future. My husband and I agree that we are better people for traveling this road. I've felt myself open up to a world of new possibilities, and I've discovered the hill I'm prepared to die on. Best of all, we see our son as our son, not as our trans son or former daughter. He becomes trans to me only when I deliver presentations like this one. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once noted that, quote, justice, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. He was absolutely right. Those of us who enjoy rights and privileges, some of them fresh and hard won, must never sit back while others are denied justice, equality, and basic human dignity. It is simply not okay to pull up the ladder while others are still struggling to get over the wall. And when we sing the words, "O Canada, glorious and free," we should remember that while all of us are glorious, even fabulous, many of us are far from free. Some of us are in closets, chained by fear, marginalization, bullies, bigotry, and beatings. We must ensure that all of us are free to love whom we choose to love, free to be authentic, free to be fully human. Recently, I had the pleasure of hearing social activist June Colwood speak at a convocation ceremony. She referred to the Second World War II boxcars that transported millions of people to their deaths. And she observed that while the Nazis' final solution was evil, people who complacently watched those boxcars pass by were evil in their own right. It is in this vein that I ask two favors of all of you. The next time someone makes an inappropriate or offensive remark to someone in the Pride community or to anyone else, or is physically or emotionally abusive, derail the boxcar. Put your Unitarian principles into action and challenge that person, even if your voice trembles. Remember that we covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and that we strive for justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. My second favor is this. I want you to look into your hearts today and think how you will respond as parents or grandparents or friends or Unitarians if someday a child comes to you and says, "There's something I need to tell you." Thank you.
I think we can take about 5 minutes. Would that be okay if anybody has any comments? Jim, are you going to run around? Thank you.
Okay, just want to make sure I got this set, and we're good.
Thank you so much, Carol, for this presentation. I think it's a topic that is one that that's really important that we start exploring, because it doesn't seem to be very it just needs to be explored. I have a friend who transitioned 30 years ago, and I had known her for 20 years prior to that. And when she transitioned, she came and said, "There's something I need to tell you." And she told my parents first, because she kind of adopted our family many years prior, because her own family was berserk. And so when she told me, I'd never heard of that before, but I thought it was probably a good idea, you know. And but prior to that, she was... you just felt that she there wasn't a whole person there. And after the transition, and you know, some time had passed, she began to seem like a more full person, just not a different person, but just fuller. Mm-hmm. And in the last, I think it's 5, 6, 7 years, is the first time, though, she started talking about her experience and writing about it for the parents of children who are in this situation where they're in the wrong body. And her stories are heartbreaking, heart-wrenching. One of the places where she has contact, though I don't think she's part of the LGBT community here, she just identifies with a woman, and I think that she made the transition at a time I don't think there were other people around, and she's just sort of stayed on her own. But there's a website called Mermaids that talks about the children and what adults and teachers can do to assist the children and the parents, mm-hmm. when the kids are really young, because many of them know from the time, well, my friend knew from the time she was 2 or 3, and there are family pictures that show her engaged in the girl activities of the family only. And she just thought that, you know, something was wrong, but other people didn't know the truth, but she did, about the fact that she was a girl. Anyway, I just wanted to share that website. And
you said that was Mermaid?
Mermaid.
Mermaid. Mm-hmm.
It's either Mermaid or Mermaids. I think it has an S. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just wanted to encourage people to, I don't know, to act in the ways that this mother has acted, but also to become a little more aware of what can be done, because schools are now having washrooms that are set aside, sort of like family washrooms, but either gender can use them. Probably anybody can use, mm-hmm. like anybody passing by can use them, but they're especially there for children who are not, I don't know, who are wondering or have this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry I took so long.
Oh, thank you, Sandra. That was really important.
I was just going to ask you about, how long, is it just our civilizations? Because I'm sure I read that some ancient civilizations where trans people were revered and held as special people. Where did we develop this bias that we have to overcome now? In our family, I had a very brilliant nephew, and this was all very hush-hush until he doused himself with kerosene and lit himself on fire, that we found out about his sexuality. But has it always been like this, that we have to overcome this?
Who would like to answer that? I guess we don't know, but different societies certainly have approached issues of sexual orientation and identity differently, haven't they? Certainly the Aboriginal community had a different view. Ingrid, are you going to?
Thank you. I don't have the answer to that question, but I do know that in ancient Roman times, diverse sexuality was accepted. Mm-hmm. And but that's all I know about that. So don't know if it would have been prior to Christianity becoming the sort of dominant religion. But anyway, I mean, I know that diverse sexuality isn't accepted in other areas where Christianity isn't the dominant religion. Like, I don't think China and other parts of Malaysia are very supportive either, but or certainly not Pakistan and Muslim areas for the most part. But I did see a program on television, which I thought it was worth mentioning. And it was very interesting. It was a documentary, a science documentary, and it talked about all the work that's been done on genetics and the whole issue of XX and XY. Mm-hmm. And they actually found out that there's no such thing as a pure XX or a pure XY, and that we're all mixtures, and that we all have that. You know, there's very rare. It's very rare when anybody's genes is like purely one or the other. So I just think that's mm-hmm. and it expresses itself in terms of anatomy in different ways. And I understand sometimes children are born with both genitals,
yeah.
And the doctors make a decision, and then the child later wants to become the other.
You probably heard in Joan's presentation that the definition is, as defined at birth by the doctor. Doctors have the power to identify a gender.
Weeble will be the last. We're running out of time, but I think we could talk about this all day.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the Canadian Teachers Federation does have resources available as well. So if you do know of children that are in schools that are having some issues because of their identity, you can maybe direct the teacher to those resources. And I think, like in First Nations culture as well, there's a two-spirited people as well. And and also, I think in the new schools that have been built, there's no boys or girls washrooms. It's just a series of kind of toilets in a row and common washing spaces as well. So possibly things are changing, but whenever you hear about a new school being built, then make sure you put in your 2 cents in.
I know that's true. The Douglas Park Elementary School has an altogether different design than usual, and that's part of the difference.
I just want to add one more thing. I yesterday in the paper, actually it wasn't in the paper, I got it on the internet. So it says First Nations youth find refuge with Gay Straight Alliance, and this is in North Battleford, and there was a story. I looked today, I was going to print an extra copy, but it wasn't in under Leader Post. But I think if you look up Gay Straight Alliance First Nations, you Google it, you'll probably get it. And I will make some copies of this. It's the only copy I have. I'll make some copies of this and make it available next week.